1230 AM Denmark, W250 CD Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, U.S. Strikes Back. I'm Mark Remillard. The U.S. striking targets linked to Iranian-backed militants in Iraq and Syria. Retaliation for the deaths of three U.S. service members in Jordan following a drone strike last weekend. ABC's Louis Martinez.
What we've seen here is the launching of the U.S. airstrikes in both in Iraq and Syria. This is the retaliation that we've been long expecting now for much of the week, ever since last weekend's deadly attack on that exposed U.S. base in a very remote region of Jordan. We know that B-1 bombers that flew all the way from the United States to the Middle East carried out most of these airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. We know that they struck 85 targets at 7 locations and that they used more than 125 precision munitions. Louis Martinez, ABC News, the Pentagon.
President Biden saying that this is only the beginning and more strikes will come. Biden, meanwhile, though, insisting that the U.S. is not seeking a wider conflict with Iran. This is ABC News. With the Super Bowl a little more than a week away in Las Vegas, ABC's Alex Stone says law enforcement gearing up to keep the game safe.
There are no specific credible threats against the Super Bowl, according to a confidential threat assessment obtained by ABC News and compiled by the FBI and local authorities in Las Vegas. But the assessment says law enforcement remains worried about the generalized threat environment and the possibility of lone offenders to inflict significant casualties without being detected before they act. The agencies also highlight concerns about ongoing tensions amongst outlaw motorcycle gangs in Nevada. Alex Stone, ABC News.
A California judge ordering Tesla to pay $1.5 million as part of a settlement from a civil case brought by more than 24 county district attorneys alleging the company mishandled hazardous waste at its car service centers and other locations. The DAs say Tesla cooperated with the investigation and acted to improve compliance. The company did not respond to a request for comment. I'm Mark Remillard, ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence could be used to meddle in this year's elections. As Eric Tegedoff reports, it could cause voters to mistrust all information, even the truth.
Before the New Hampshire primary, a robocall imitating President Joe Biden called voters and told them not to vote. It's seen as a potential preview of what voters could be in for as the 2024 general election approaches. Rachel Ori is the Senior Associate Director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project. She says AI could have other consequences.
Our bigger concern is what's known as a liar's dividend, that the presence of false information makes voters trust any information less.
Ori says the past few years have seen a near constant assault on accurate voting information, which has made it challenging for good information to reach voters. Ori says AI could supercharge the misinformation campaigns that have existed for years. However, election officials across the country have a leg up going into the 2024 vote.
Election officials and voting advocates around the country are sort of well prepared to mitigate and respond to increases in misinformation because they've spent the last couple of years flexing that muscle and learning how to respond to misinformation and election denial campaigns.
Ori says election officials should have a plan ready to respond to AI misinformation campaigns. She says there likely aren't any regulatory options available at the moment to stop these operations.
Technology is maybe growing faster than the regulatory tools we have available. So at present, it seems difficult to find a policy that the government could adopt and make these robocalls impossible.
Ori says another concern is targeted campaigns that use a voter's personal information to persuade them not to vote, although there aren't any documented instances of this happening yet. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, everybody, this is Aaron from The Todd Albaugh Show, just letting you know that Todd will be back on Monday with a brand new show. So tune in then from noon to 2.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight and a low in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds tomorrow and highs right around 40. Mostly sunny, warm, and mid-40s for the high Sunday. The warm weather continues for next week. Several highs in the 40s, even some 50s. Current temp is 30.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. The Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, and taking your calls at 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Or if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, you can leave a message there as well. Very, very busy show coming up today at 10:33. Our friend John Russell, who lives in Wheeling, West Virginia, he publishes The Holler newsletter on Substack, and John has joined the show before. He covered, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio.
Oh my gosh.
And when that happened, John was on the ground there quite a bit, talking to locals and talking to folks, and we want to get a little update with John and find out what's it like now in East Palestine, because from what I understand, things haven't changed all that much.
Yeah.
And haven't gotten cleaned up all that much.
But the politicians have used it for what they've needed.
They certainly have.
Yep.
Shocking that they tend to do that.
Yeah.
11:06, even though it is not Thursday, 11:06, Dr. Kristen Lierley will be here. We're going to do a different segment with her, not public cervix announcements. We're going to talk about what a woman's worth.
What a woman's worth. Kind what of a woman needs.
All related to the E. Jean Carroll case. Mm. Recently awarded $83 million from the former president for defaming her. So that's coming up at 11:06. I hope you will stick around for that. Starting things off, though, I want to do a little weather prediction update. Everybody agrees.
We want to welcome Brittany Merlot to the live stream and to the call. Oh, no, she's not here right now.
She's not here.
Why is that?
Well, because Punxsutawney Phil.
And?
And. Jimmy the Groundhog in Sun Prairie.
And?
The Milwaukee County Zoo Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
All agree.
Yep.
Nobody saw a shadow, so we're going to have an early spring.
Science.
With all of the scientific resources we have at our fingertips, we still like going with old superstitions because it's funny, I guess. Right? We've been doing this for decades, and everybody likes it. So I am very happy with the penguins, though, at the Milwaukee County Zoo. I think that's really funny.
I love penguins.
Penguins are adorable.
We need to do a show from the Milwaukee County Zoo in front of the penguin.
Well, they're working on a new entrance now for the Milwaukee County Zoo, so we can get working on that.
I think that'd be awesome to pick, like, five places that we love and do five shows. They're all, like, in southeastern Wisconsin, so, like, Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha. I mean, just do a show from each of those places.
Lots of travel plans.
We have so much ideas.
We have so many ideas.
The best ideas. I have the best ideas ever. My ideas are the biggest brain for ideas. I'm done.
Okay.
All right.
We're going to start, though, with maps. Maps are still in the news. Two consultants hired by the Wisconsin Supreme Court said redistricting plans submitted by the GOP-controlled legislature do not deserve further consideration.
I'm sorry.
Youch. The report that came out yesterday on the six map proposals that were submitted says the plan submitted by Governor Evers, Democrats, and academics are all tilted toward the Republicans, but are competitive enough that the party that wins the most votes will win the most seats. What an odd thing.
Yeah.
The one with the most votes would win the most seats.
That's what they call, in map-making parlance, fair maps.
Consultants Bernard Gruffman and Jonathan Servas, these were the two experts that were hired,
yeah,
did not recommend which Democratic proposal they thought was better, finding that none was dominant when it comes to political neutrality. But they did, again, point out in their report that came out late yesterday that the proposed maps from the GOP lawmakers and Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty would essentially stop Dems from winning control of the legislature unless their candidate at the top of the ticket does well above a simple majority. This kind of insulation from the forces of electoral change is the hallmark of a gerrymander. To put it simply, geography is not destiny.
Also, little known fact, both maps submitted by the GOP and Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, done in crayon.
They were not done in crayon.
They were done in crayon.
But they were not contiguous.
A lovely burnt umber.
You know your crayon colors.
I know my crayon colors. At least I know burnt umber.
You had the 64 box, didn't you?
With the pencil sharpener.
Oh, nice. Very nice. They were not written in crayon, but they were not contiguous.
Yeah.
And when we talked to Dan Schaefer last time, essentially, and that is in the state constitution, that these districts have to touch. They have to touch each other.
I'm really surprised that in the 12 years that the GOP has controlled this state, they haven't tried to change that constitutional aspect.
Well, it's been going so well for them for so long.
But just to cover their tuckuses.
True.
That they wouldn't just say, like, we want to get rid of this thing here. It makes map making easier in today's modern world. Oh, yeah, totally. But they didn't. So they really just shot themselves in the foot. And I used a metaphor that they will understand, a gun metaphor, for the GOP leaders listening.
The will map, according to this report that came out late yesterday, had a substantial number of fails on the criteria. The map performed well on traditional good government criteria, including the best results on the splits of political subdivisions. The consultants labeled the WILL map, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, as a stealth gerrymander. Wisconsinites want fair maps.
Yeah.
We want a fair fight. We don't want one party to just be able to sit there forever and not respond to their constituents.
And what do they not like? What do Wisconsinites not like?
Cheaters.
There it is. I was trying to find succinct and low amount of words to say what I wanted to say regarding this earlier before we went to air. I think at the end of the day, the GOP stands to gain the most no matter what happens, and I'll explain it very quickly.
No matter what map we adopt?
Exactly, because they draw a map which is blatantly out of line with the Constitution and with what the map experts are looking for. Okay, they get to say they didn't like our maps. The liberals, the liberal courts, the liberals, they don't like our maps. Because every single map, as Dan Schaefer talked about it and that article says, favors Republicans still.
Every single
it
one of them.
It doesn't guarantee a Democratic leadership.
No.
It also doesn't guarantee or even say in any way, shape, or form a landslide in favor of the Democrats.
Right.
So they're still going to hold on to power. They still get to whine. And they still get to try to push through all their terrible legislation. And I also made the point to you, I said earlier, I don't think they want total control, because if they had total control, I mean, supermajority, override the veto, that just is a bridge too far for them, because then they have to push through all this
really unpopular,
extreme legislation that's going to get them in even bigger trouble. So as long as there's a pen saying veto, or there's arguments coming from the left up in Madison, and they're still in power, they still get everything they want.
They still get to complain about it.
They get to complain, and they still get to run things.
844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Mark, joining us from Prairie du Sac. Good morning, Mark. Thank you so much for calling in. What did you want to say?
Yeah, good morning. I'd be curious. I haven't seen the maps yet that the Republicans on Will submitted, but I wonder if those even met the standards of contiguous and compact, considering that looking at the even at the national level, the map for our representatives do not seem compact. That, you know, they look very gerrymandered as well, the way they weave and, you know, weave and split things up the way that probably shouldn't be happening. But I mean, that the fact of the matter is the maps for at least, you know, 12, 13 years did not meet the constitutional requirement. I mean, that of contiguous and compact, and the fact that they can't get around that. I mean, that's the point that I would have hammered home years ago. I mean, that and use that as a cudgel on Brian Hagedorn's head, is that he should have recused himself the last time, because if I remember right, that he was actually, you know, Scott Walker's, you know, advisor on some of these issues on the maps, legislative maps. That, I mean, that the maps have to meet constitutional muster, and that goes down to, like, wards are supposed to be within the same legislative district. Towns and counties are supposed to be split up as little as possible. You know, that counties aren't supposed to be split up. That it is just, they should be based purely on geography and population, and recognizing the outlines given in our Constitution. You know, that I think it's down like wards are supposed to be. You know, I can't remember. I don't have it sitting in front of me right now, but I mean that communities are supposed to be held intact and not supposed to be split up for some kind of partisan advantage.
Right.
And the fact that they would submit maps that, you know, kept their, you know, the incumbent safe is just an affront to the decision in the first place. It should be an affront to everybody.
But it's so funny that you say that, though, Mark. When we had Dan Schaefer on earlier this week, and we were talking about this, they didn't even follow the assignment.
No.
They intentionally did not follow the assignment that called for a contiguous, you know, touching areas and all that stuff. And I was just like, no, we're not going to.
This is
not,
what we drew in. This is
what we want the assignment to be.
Yeah. So thanks for calling, Mark.
Thank you so much, Mark. Anybody else want to check in on this? 844-967-2789. Again, this is not a completely done deal. We just know that the two consultants that were hired by the Supreme Court essentially said these two, submitted by the Republicans and also the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, mm-hmm. again, build in gerrymandering.
Yeah. They're not following the Constitution. They're not following anything. They're just doing it their way, which is, you know, I mean, it's worked for a dozen years.
It's worked for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has. And life's been good for them.
Yes.
Now they're just, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to work a little hard. Makes me feel so bad. Got to get out of that hammock and find a springboard to the to the ladder of work.
Got
to
knock on some doors and talk to some people, not just the people who agree with you. Guys, just
talk to all your constituents.
I want to see how this works for some of these individuals. This is going to be the first time for some of them ever where they're going to have to do the actual work of campaigning to convince somebody, I'm the best person for this job, not just you have no choice.
Right. So. And again, we've said from the very beginning, I don't want either side to be cheating like this.
Yeah.
I just want it to be a fair fight. All right. When we return, MTG steps in it again.
She knows all the words.
I love words. We'll share our love of words on the way. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's a big year for the Fox Cities Chamber.
Everything we do will have the 150th incorporated in.
Chamber Executive VP of Marketing, Laura Wiegert, joined Mino and the mayor to celebrate and share some history.
There was a Menasha Chamber, a Nina Chamber. They merged. The Appleton-Nina-Menasha Chambers merged in 1976.
Wiegert says events will be happening all year to take a look back at the Fox Cities and look forward to more success for the area.
We just want to tell our story. For us, that's a big
thing. Absolutely.
Because as the mayor said, people just don't know what chambers do and who they are. And we want people to know how we impact the community.
Congratulations on 150 years. You can learn more about the anniversary at foxcitieschamber.com. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Even though I'm in love, sometimes I get so afraid, I'll say something so wrong, just to have something to say.
Good morning, welcome, welcome, welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, taking your calls at 844-967-2789, 844-96.
Pasty.
Or if you're watching on the live stream, you can leave a comment there as well on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Coming up at 10:33, John Russell is going to be joining us. Tomorrow was the one-year anniversary, it's really hard to believe, of the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Mm-hmm. That huge chemical, they ended up blowing up all those chemicals.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to get an update from John, see what's going on in that part of the country. I know he's been traveling around quite a bit as well. So, John Russell coming up at 10:33. Also want to remind you to download the Civic Media app. You can listen to all the stations all across the state, all 20 of them.
How much?
It's free.
The app is free?
The app is absolutely free. And when you download the app, you can call in directly from it. So that's a nice little...
Or text us.
Or text us too, 844-967-2789. All right, I'm going to admit this right off the bat. I'm not proud of it, but it's accurate.
What's that?
I'm a word snob.
That's fine.
I like words.
I don't...
I think they're important.
I think they're important, but I also... You're not the type of person who goes out of their way to make someone feel bad if they say a word incorrectly. Like, in common conversation, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, you said that wrong.
I would like to think not. Yeah. But if I don't like the person, I would certainly point it out.
That's a whole other bag of chips there, Jane.
So this kind of jumped out at me yesterday. One of our favorite Republican politicians from
Tom
Georgia.
Cotton? Oh,
no, that's a whole... No, oh, boy. No, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Ah, yes.
Madge was... calling for the impeachment of the secretary, Mayorkas.
Transportation.
Mayorkas, they want.
No, that's Buttigieg.
No, he's the border.
Sorry.
Mayorkas is his last name.
I said that with such confidence, too.
And while she's talking about why he should be impeached for his failures at the border, this is what she had to say.
This historical evidence is overwhelming that the founding fathers intended impeachment to be used to deal with the commission of indictable crimes and the abuse of power.
Do we have to hit the dump button? Do we have to, like, blurb something out? Because I feel like the FCC might fine us.
Indictable?
I mean, that sounds like what she just said sounds like an indictable crime.
It's actually pronounced indictable.
Yeah.
An indictable crime.
Yeah.
Not indictable. Small thing. But then when you think about the fact that Marge was the one who brought in great big blown up pictures of Hunter Biden's private parts and showed them on the House floor during hearings.
And she accused somebody of being on tweeting, and he goes, I'm not on Twitter. She goes, I think you are. Like, she just does, like, it's just those individuals can't hear a provable no. No matter what you say to them, like, no, but. Mr. Smith, my last name is Bach. Oh, sure it is. Okay.
Right.
You know?
So, well, obviously Twitter piled on her big time. She can't get Hunter Biden off of her mind, wrote vocal GOP critic George Conway. Melissa Peltier said, we call that a Hunterian slip. Another person on Twitter said, apparently she can't read either. She needs her finger to follow along the sentences.
I'm sorry. That one, you
You're
know what?
Give her a pass on that?
I'm giving her a pass. Some people, you know what? Some people read differently, and I'm not being funny here. Some people read differently. Their lips move when they read. They use their finger. They speed read. They slow read. You know, I don't care about that stuff. Indictable, though. I'm going to say that on accident today. I guarantee you. It's in my head like a like an earworm song.
Kevin, I want to hear it in her own lovely mellifluous voice. Marjorie Taylor Greene yesterday talking about why Mayorkas needs to be impeached.
This historical evidence is overwhelming that the founding fathers intended impeachment to be used to deal with the commission of indictable crimes and the abuse of power.
You know, some guys walk up to,
I'm a bad person.
Some guys walking up to a lady in a bar somewhere and they're going, yeah, I can.
Papa Rico watching on the live stream, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Georgia's Southern Karen.
I'll go, Southern Fried Karen.
Southern Fried Karen.
Yeah, she's a trip. I mean, she's part of that class, the
Freedom Caucus.
The well, yeah, but like the Gateses and the Boberts and the her and the, I just want to see them bounced out of Washington while going, what do you mean?
I think Boebert's going to have a tough time.
Oh, I think so too.
I think Lauren Boebert's going to have a tough time. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene, at least in her district, is pretty popular.
That's unfortunate.
I think they like her. Mispronunciations and all, which is fine.
Makes her
that's
more folksy.
The worst that not, well, mispronouncing a word is certainly not the worst thing that you can do.
I don't disagree with that as well. We all mispronounce words all the time. Not all the time, but we do. Yeah, I think Boebert, because she, I think moving districts was going to be her biggest mistake.
Absolutely.
Carpetbagger.
Absolutely. And no. she just came in fifth. They just had their first debate. Where, and I don't know that we ever got the chance to mention this, during that debate in Lauren Boebert's new district in Colorado, they asked how many of them had been arrested, and out of the eight of them, six raised their hands, and then they high-fived each other.
Yeah. Yes, because that's the world we live in now, where...
So that's a badge of honor, being mm-hmm. arrested for something.
Yeah. Yep.
The party of law and order, right?
Yep. The party of family values.
And backing the blue.
Yes.
High-fiving. Because they all Woo! Got arrested. And Lauren Boebert was among those too, because she's been arrested more than once. So that should put her at the, I mean, if we're going to use that as the scale, then she should be at the top of the list.
Good job, Colorado. Good job.
All right. Interesting days ahead.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun year, Jane.
Tony Zimmerman on the stream. Only criminals should be making laws. That's right.
Aren't they already? A boom.
Oh,
A-boom. Social top commentary.
All right. One other thing I want to mention, if you are a hockey fan, tonight, Minnesota at Wisconsin
yeah.
starts at 6:30. You can listen on WRJN in Racine, 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, and in Kenosha at 98.1 FM. So hockey fans tonight, Minnesota at Wisconsin, that starts at 6:30. Stay close. We have news on the way next. We'll get a little weather for you, too. When we come back, John Russell will be joining us. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the best healing I've ever known. It's undeniably real. Oh, leave a tender moment alone. Oh, leave a tender moment alone. Leave a tender moment alone.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
This is a special report from ABC News. U.S. strikes back. I'm Mark Remillard. The U.S. striking targets linked to Iranian-backed militants in Iraq and Syria. Retaliation for the deaths of three U.S. service members in Jordan following a drone strike last weekend. ABC's Louis Martinez.
What we've seen here is the launching of the U.S. airstrikes in both in Iraq and Syria. This is the retaliation that we've been long expecting now for much of the week, ever since last weekend's deadly attack on that exposed U.S. base in a very remote region of Jordan. We know that B-1 bombers that flew all the way from the United States to the Middle East carried out most of these airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. We know that they struck 85 targets at 7 locations and that they used more than 125 precision munitions. Louis Martinez, ABC News, the Pentagon.
President Biden saying that this is only the beginning and more strikes will come. Biden, meanwhile, though, insisting that the U.S. is not seeking a wider conflict with Iran. This is ABC News.
Badgers hope to rebound. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In men's college basketball, the number 6th-ranked Wisconsin Badgers lost Thursday night to Nebraska 80-72 in overtime. Matt LePay with the call on the Badgers radio network.
Hepburn with 7 seconds left. Chucky, a deep three. It's off the rim, no good. Gary the rebound, and Nebraska wins it in overtime by 8. And another court storm here in Lincoln as the 6th-ranked team in the country goes down.
Now, Wisconsin has a chance to hold on to that spot in the top 10 when they host the number 2-ranked Purdue Boilermakers Sunday at noon. Head coach Greg Gard asked, will his team need to cut down on the turnovers against Purdue?
Yeah, that combined with bad shot selection and no play in the paint. We don't get to the free throw line, and we are going to get fouled when you're consistently shooting jump shots.
That's the Badgers head basketball coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight and a low in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds tomorrow and highs right around 40. Mostly sunny, warm, and mid-40s for the high Sunday. The warm weather continues for next week. Several highs in the 40s, even some 50s. Current temp is 30.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start, and it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org, a message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jam from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jam.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people don't say, oh, man, she's a Republican, she's a Democrat, she's a whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
My love is deeper than the holler, stronger than the river, higher than the pine tree.
Good morning, Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. So very happy to have you along. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always call or text at 844-967-2789 or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. It has been a while since we've had the chance to talk to our next guest. I know you had a lot going on in your life personally and also professionally. Delighted to have him back. John Russell publishes the Holler newsletter on Substack and lives in Wheeling, West Virginia. Tomorrow, John, I can't believe it's the one-year anniversary of the derailment of that train in East Palestine.
I can't believe it either. By the way, thanks for having me on, but look forward to talking about it. Time flies.
It sure does. It really does. And Greg and I, before the show, and we had booked you for a couple of days ago, it honestly seems like it was longer than that. It feels like this train derailment, at least for people here, at least for me, it's like, oh, that happened 3 years ago. One-year anniversary is tomorrow. For people who aren't up on this, John, explain what happened.
Yeah, a year ago, a Norfolk Southern train derailed in East Palestine. This is Eastern Ohio, where I'm from. A lot of people get mixed up about this part of the country. This is 10 minutes from Pennsylvania, very close to West Virginia. It was carrying a number of toxic chemicals. Those spilled out into the environment. But what people might remember is that five cars of vinyl chloride were detonated and this huge mushroom cloud over town happened. And then we all kind of watched the fallout from that. And here we are a year later, kind of looking back at the consequences for such a massive disaster. I mean, this is a really large chemical exposure and we're a year on from it. And lots of aspects to the story.
It's a small community. It's right. It's only like 5,000-6,000 people. But the fact that they chose to detonate those cars is still mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, when I my involvement with the story came from covering the rail industry on other aspects. There was almost a rail strike. That's kind of part of this scenario. You might remember, you know, back in, let me get my year straight here, but 2022, at the end of 2022, rail workers were thinking of going on strike because they were overworked. There weren't enough people who were conducting safety operations.
Right.
They were under constant pressure from management to do their job faster, to keep these, you know, trains safe. That have a lot of aspects that you have to make sure are good so accidents like this don't happen. I was covering that, and one of the interviewees said, you know, if we don't get better working conditions to make sure these trains carrying toxic chemicals through all of our towns, we're going to have a major disaster. And that was a month before East Palestine happened. So it's part of this larger safety conversation.
If I remember correctly, John, all of this started with the train industry, the rail industry. A new guy came in and put in a new set of procedures, and it was all about optimizing profit, right? It's always about optimizing profit. And so that's when they really started cutting back on staff. They really started cutting back on these safety features in order to optimize the amount of money that they're making. And as you said, what was the ramification? A month later, a big kaboom, you know? And I'm assuming that people in East Palestine are still dealing with health issues.
Yeah, 100%. What you're right about that. What you're referring to there is this business practice that kind of took over the rail industry at the behest of Wall Street, their major investors. It's called Precision Scheduled Railroad. And it does all the things to jack up profits. It makes the trains longer. They're trying to have less people staffing the trains. Important safety inspectors, you know, there are hundreds of points on a single car, you know, and trains can be miles long, right? You got to inspect hundreds of points on a car. Each one, you're supposed to have 3 minutes as a safety inspector to do it. Precision Scheduled Railroad wanted you to do it in 30 seconds, right? It's all of these cost-cutting measures just to return more profits to Wall Street. And, you know, East Palestine is now paying the consequence, definitely a year out, and will be for years in the future. Yeah.
Have the residents of East Palestine been given any kind of satisfaction? I mean, did Norfolk Southern give them any kind of settlement or any kind of assistance at all?
You know, they do. But what we're seeing play out in East Palestine is could be said of any major industrial tragedy. You know, these are multi-billion dollar global corporations. And the level of assistance that flows to a town that it experiences a disaster like this is ultimately a cost of doing business that these companies really plan for.
Right.
You know, so what we've seen, they put millions of dollars into a city park. They sent, you know, a couple kids in town to, they gave them scholarships to college, all of these kind of, there's a big PR push around this. But ultimately, you know, it's tough to put the toothpaste back in the tube. They blew up rail cars. Close to 1 million pounds of a toxic chemical was incinerated, spilled into the air, into the water, into the soil. So what's the price that you put on that? What is the right measure of accountability? A lot of people in town feel like you can't put a price on the homes that they saved up for their life or the things they have to deal with now.
John Russell is our guest. He publishes the Holler newsletter on Substack. He lives in Wheeling, West Virginia, and was very much involved in reporting on the East Palestine rail derailment that happened last year. Tomorrow, the anniversary is tomorrow. They ended up blowing up 5 cars of this highly toxic chemical. I would be terrified to drink the water. You know, it's lovely that they put money into a park. Who wants to go sit outside?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, this is what we are all kind of expected to accept, right? Anytime one of these giant tragedies happen, we get, you know, a park out of it or something like that. But really, there needs to be a measure of accountability here. And, you know, we keep talking about these train cars that were blown up. One of the things that I think, you know, listeners, everybody should keep front and center is something that wasn't really, you know, the tragedy of these things is that there's a lot of coverage in the first couple of days.
And then it all goes away.
Yeah, it goes away and you find out important stuff. One of those underreported things that we found out later from the NTSB investigation is that the chemical manufacturer of, you know, that was the chemical that is being carried in these cars was saying at the time, there isn't a big risk of these cars blowing up. You don't have to go out there and preempt the risk of these cars blowing up on them on themselves. At the time, that was the justification for doing this. There were temperature charts about these cars that came out later that showed at the time they were detonated, the temperature and pressure in the cars had leveled off and stabilized. And by the way, the morning when they detonated these cars, 5 of them were blown up. The morning of the detonation, they were only planning on one. And the company added 4 other cars, massively increasing the chemical exposure here, in spite of what the company who made the chemicals said, in spite of what the temperature charts said about their risk of blowing up. And we still don't have a clear answer for why they increased that chemical exposure. And the last thing here that's important is there are guidebooks for doing this kind of detonation. They say you need a 1 mile evacuation zone for each car of this stuff. They made the 1 mile thing. They decided to add 4 more cars, but they kept a 1 mile evacuation zone. So those are important.
Is this all done? I mean, are there anything else working through the legal system or lawsuits or anything like this? Or is it just, as you said, John, it's a price of doing business. Oh, well, you're all going to have cancer in 30 years. You know, good luck.
You know, it's always unfolding. You never say never. But I think we're seeing a lot of the same industrial disaster patterns happen. It takes years to know the consequences of this kind of chemical exposure. I mean, just think about it. Where's all that stuff go? Look at the mushroom cloud. Where did all of the byproducts go? You can walk down and kick a hunk of mud off of the creek bank today and watch the chemicals bloom in the water. I mean, people do that. So we're going to see the consequences consequences of this for years. There are lawsuits in the works, but I think the question on everybody's mind is this the best that we can accept?
Well, and as I looked more into this, John, and you had talked too about the length of some of these trains, we're talking miles long. So if you're at the front of the train, you can't even see the back.
Yeah.
I don't know again, we have trains that run through downtown Waukesha that they're certainly not a mile and a half long. But for people who don't encounter it on a daily basis, you know, think about it on a daily basis, these things are moving all through the country all the time, whether you see them or not. These super long trains carrying all kinds of things, it may not be, you know, coming through your neighborhood, but it's going through somebody's neighborhood.
Yeah, they're longer. There are less employees on these trains. The industry is having a higher turnover rate. The experts who stay on and have all the institutional knowledge are being replaced with younger guys that have less training and are paid lower wages. It's all part of this precision scheduled railroad that's jacking up profits for the industry. And it should be called into question.
844-967-2789 if you want to join the conversation. We have Tom from L.A. on the line. Good morning, Tom. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Good morning. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. There's only one thing that's really missing from this whole story, I believe, and that is the difference between private and public. Public means that we all own it and it's not for profit. And private means that the private owner and they can do whatever the hell they want with it and they are trying to increase their profits. So that is the big difference. And I think that needs to be said. Is it John? I think John is on here that it's a private corporation that's running this thing. And because of money and politics, they're probably influencing the referees on the field, so to speak. But there really needs to be a distinction between when something's private and when it's public. Because to privatize it means to profitize it. So I'd like you to kind of riff on that a little bit, John, if you can.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Always appreciate you calling, and thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, you know what, Tom? Glad you gave us that prompt here. One of the things that sticks out to me about this and a consequence of these huge companies being completely private, run for profit, there is right now, you know, the news is covering this aspect of the story. There's an effort by investors to remove Alan Shaw. But that only happened after the company missed earnings reports.
Oh, geez.
They're trying to remove him because, you know, this costs so much money. Maybe if Alan Shaw had been more ruthless in his response and less, you know, did even less for East Palestine, the investors would be happy. But as long as we have private control over major companies that have the public interest at risk when they carry these chemicals through our towns every day, we are at the behest of the interest of investors.
You know, there was someone in a boardroom saying, "Why did we build them a park?"
They should be grateful.
Yeah.
They should be grateful we gave them a park. It's just also it's also highly disturbing. Sherry Manazi watching on the live stream says we wait 20 to 25 minutes constantly for the trains in Horicon. So that's got to be getting on a mile, right?
The morning train here in Waukesha is pretty long too. I've gotten caught a couple of times, and if it's slowing down too, mother glory.
We're going to keep this conversation going. John Russell will still be here. You can always join us. Call or text at 844-967-2789. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pine trees growing tall upon the hill. My love is purer than the snowflakes that fall in late December. Honest as a robin on the springtime windowsill, and longer than the song of a whippoorwill. My love is deeper than the hollow.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, and taking your calls at 844-967-2789. Leave a comment on the live stream if you like, and if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. John Russell is our guest. He publishes the Holler newsletter on Substack, lives in Wheeling, West Virginia, and has been kind of our correspondent with everything going on in East Palestine, Ohio, after that horrible train derailment that happened a year tomorrow.
Yeah.
Greg, you said you had a question for John.
Yeah, so we were talking, we brought it up, you know, the aftermath of the entire event. Wasn't short of politicians coming into the town to not so much talk about the people and even talk about the event, but really point fingers at each other, tweet out campaign letters, complain, all these things, and not really give a lot of information either. In fact, some of them are spreading like conspiracy theories based off the explosion itself. What did the town feel after it all went away, as far as like the politicians, once they had used it for what they needed to get headlines, to do what they do? After the circus left town, where were they left besides having a park, some toxic chemicals in the air? You know, it didn't seem like, you know, the politicians were there to care. They were there just to use it, get the photo op, and get out of town.
I mean, sadly, that's where they're left. You know, the media will come through and the politicians will come through. And then, you know, people in town right now, I was talking to a couple of them just this week. One of them still put up in a hotel. She has a son that is, you know, on long distance learning, who their therapists say, you know, that's supposed to be a short-term thing. His socialization's affected. Lots of people are still displaced by this. You know, if you're not still in a hotel, then you're going back into a house that you really don't have clear answers on.
Yeah.
I mean, the first tip of the spear here in cleanup was left to Norfolk Southern and the contractors that they hired.
Oh, that's really comforting.
Yeah, right. You know, there you go. Sleep on that for a little bit. You know, the EPA then came over and took over the reins, but even their track record is very spotty with industrial disasters. And I think that, you know, brings up a question here, regardless of, you know, what party the politicians visiting are involved in. Do we have too much corporate capture of every single party and institution that responds mm-hmm. to this? You can look back at even a Norfolk Southern disaster, you know, more than a decade ago, where 9 people died. And the communities there are kind of left with the same questions that have been put on to East Palestine. Everybody's mm-hmm. kind of out there making their own decisions.
Well, and as you said, too, it's a small town. It's only about 5,000 people. It's not like they've got a lot of clout that they yeah. can go and demand things from their representatives. You know, as we've been saying, politicians show up and use it for whatever messaging they want, and then they take off again. A couple people on the live stream had mentioned, John, the home. I mean, these people can't move. They're not going to be able to sell their homes. Who's going to buy a house in East Palestine?
Yeah, it makes me think of a person that did not make it into our coverage. We had a bit. We had a YouTube video that went pretty big on this. It's at 2.6 million views now.
And, wow!
But it was good. But a lot of people we interviewed didn't make it in, and one of them was an 80-year-old woman named Linda that we met in this McDonald's that became the headquarters for all the journalists there. We all used the Wi-Fi. She moved to East Palestine. She lost her husband tragically. In that tragedy, she lost a lot of the value in their home, and she looked for a new start in East Palestine. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, this happened. She's 80 years old. She already lost the value once. She was in McDonald's drinking water when I met her because her home smelled like an electrical fire, you know. And now this 80-year-old person, how long does she have to wait for lawsuits to shake out about this or for funds to set up to be set up to compensate for the value of her home? She doesn't have a choice. She's going to go back into the house there. This is an aging community too. And a lot of people are in the same spot.
You're just trapped.
Yep.
You are literally trapped. And as you said too, John, litigation can take years and years and years. And if you don't have the money on your side, they can just bury it in appeals and drag it out. And I just watched Aaron Brockovich last night, and this reminds me of the same kind of fight with going up against a corporation like PG&E.
Well, I mean, and today too is like that's at least they ended up paying eventually, because now I feel like we live in a world where we don't expect the corporations to ever pay to everybody. They settle, but they never admit guilt, or they just walk away because no one wants to prosecute.
Or as John said too, they just build this in as their it's the price of doing business.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple derailments a year, oh, we got that covered. You know, as far as the people affected by the derailments, well, that's not our problem. Yeah. We got a couple of minutes left, John. What else have you been? I know you've been really busy and you've been doing a lot of traveling. What else has been happening in the holler?
Oh man, well, I just love to involve myself in covering human tragedy. It's all sunshine and rainbows over here at the Holler in Wheeling, West Virginia. You know, these things are all kind of related, right? Greg, I wanted to go off of your point there, maybe wrap up this East Palestine stuff. It's true. We only send people to jail for the small crimes. The big crimes, the biggest crimes, we let those slide. We call them the cost of doing business. And you see it, DuPont, Purdue Pharma, you know, pick any AIG, the financial crisis, yeah, right? We're all living in the backwash of this stuff. So yeah, I think at some point we all have to decide how much longer to put up with that. The Holler, we're going to be covering, keep an eye out for this in your cities, homeless camp bans are sweeping the nation. One just passed in Wheeling. The city government, instead of fixing the massive potholes around here, used bulldozers to displace homeless people. But this is also related to a lot of conservative model legislation that's been sweeping. So look out for that story on the Holler.
You can.
We only cover happy stories.
Well, it's all, as you said, sunshine and rainbows.
Aren't
and
there any puppies you can talk about?
No, because it's going to be a sick puppy who has been drinking bad water.
Yeah, exactly.
You can find we'll John Russell's The Holler newsletter on Substack. Really appreciate it. Thank you so
Thanks
very much,
here,
John. We will touch base in a couple months.
Thank you guys for having me, and keep it real out there in Wisconsin.
Will do.
News is coming up next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Oh, yeah.
The home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.